Hello and welcome to Inside Education. My name is Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. Coming up on today's programme...
We're probably losing between 8 and 10,000 students over the course of a cycle of studies. We still have three quarters graduating, and that's considered very good by international standards.
We'll hear why 15% of students who entered third level education this autumn will not be there this time next year. But first, we go to Barry Hennessy for this week's news. What have you got for us this week, Barry?
Hello again, Sean. Well, on last week's programme, we looked at where the cuts might be made to the education budget as part of the €4.5 billion in expenditure cuts the government will seek to bring in on December the 7th. Within hours of our programme, the full force of budget speculation shifted to the education sector, with copious column inches and airtime being devoted to alarming rumours of cuts to jobs and programmes and increases in third-level registration fees. All the while, the teachers' unions, soon to be joined by one-time bad boys, the TUI, are in ongoing talks with the Department of Education and Skills on the increasingly anachronistic-looking Croke Park deal. Dermot Dupuyre is Deputy General Secretary of the ASTI, and he's been giving me his reaction to this week's speculation surrounding the education budget.
Well, as far as we're concerned, it's all speculation. There is a programme for government which guarantees, among other things, that they won't touch the pupil-teacher ratio again, and they reinstated some of the very foolish cuts that they'd made toward the education budget in a previous budget in the renewed programme for government. The education spokesperson for the Greens has been on the radio and very forcefully said that, as far as he's concerned, that programme for government is not going to be rolled back. And I think in the present economic climate, while there may be pressure to cut all over the place, it would be very, very foolish to use education, as education is the driver of the economy. And without a well-educated workforce, we're never going to recover from where we are at the moment.
I take your point that the Greens education spokesperson and Paul Gogarty, rather, has been out attempting to suggest that they would simply not stand for an increase in the pupil-teacher ratio. But there have been other suggestions as well, such as the one that transition year might be for the chop. Now, either of those measures would surely cause cuts to teaching jobs.
They would definitely cause cuts to teaching jobs, and that would be serious, and we would obviously resist it as union representing teachers. They would also be extremely damaging to the education system. It would take the notion of cutting the pupil-teacher ratio. People talk about, what about one more child in a class? What difference will it make? Well, the first thing is, we already have among the largest class sizes in Europe. But the second thing is, particularly at second level, it's not simply a matter of just adding a child to a class. When the cuts came in last time, when they increased the pupil-teacher ratio the last time, one of the main effects, and we surveyed it and so did the management bodies and all the results were similar, is that subjects were lost because with less teachers in the school you'd less options to give subjects. And interestingly, the subjects that were lost were physics, chemistry, science at junior level, and modern languages, which are the very, very subjects that are essential for the smart economy, which we keep being told is what we're going to depend on to get us out of this mess we're in at the moment.
All of this happens at the same time as the ASTI is in ongoing negotiations with regard to the terms of the Croke Park Agreement, which commits the government to no compulsory redundancies and no pay cuts. Now, if there is a need to reduce numbers, if there were a need to reduce numbers in the education sector, why is nobody calling for a voluntary redundancy scheme for teachers?
Well, that's actually an interesting point on a lot of levels. First of all, one of the elements that is being discussed is a new redeployment scheme, and that would certainly save numbers and save money and save considerable money for the government. Teachers were able to be redeployed more easily. One of the things that we certainly were horrified at in the education cuts a couple of years ago was the abolition of the early retirement schemes, which were very useful on the whole level, and that effectively was voluntary redundancy for teachers, often for teachers who either were surplus to requirements, which are teachers who were struggling after maybe 30 or 40 years and there was an element of burnout, and it gave them a dignified way out of the system. And we think it was a very, very big mistake to remove that option, and that effectively was a voluntary redundancy scheme for teachers. So we would have no problem with a voluntary redundancy scheme on the right terms, but not one that is going to impact on the students, not a voluntary redundancy scheme where schools will be left without enough teachers to cover the full range of subjects that students should be studying and are entitled to be able to study.
I'm going to take you up on that point about redeployment, because obviously in the primary sector there's an extensive redeployment scheme, and indeed temporary teachers with a certain amount of service are eligible to go on the redeployment panel. I mean, wouldn't that be the fairest type of option to be putting in place in post-primary, and the current talks regarding redeployment, would they apply to non-permanent teachers?
Well, the legislation would suggest that anything would have to apply to non-permanent teachers. But in terms of redeployment, I'm not sure how much it would apply. But in terms of the fairness of it, they would have to be equally eligible. But if they don't have permanent status, whether they would go in, I can't talk to you about the details of any redeployment schemes that we're engaged in at the moment, as you can understand. But I can say that certainly redeployment is something that we are interested in seeing a proper redeployment scheme in place, which would enable teachers to move from one school to another where there was a need. And we would like it to have a voluntary element. And in fact, we're very keen that there be a voluntary element where teachers who want to move to another part of the country, if there is a suitable vacancy for them, that they should be able to do that.
Dermot Dupuer of the ASTI there. Now, one other interesting story for you. In the highly respected Times Higher Education magazine in the UK, this weekend published an account of a leaked draft of the long-awaited Hunt report on the future of higher education in this country. Overall, the key findings of the report are in line with current government rhetoric. Multidisciplinary research, commercial returns and collaboration, they're all in there. So is approval for the return of tuition fees. But it's the report's shortcomings that come to the fore in the article. Colin Hunt's committee is criticised for being short on academic expertise and top-heavy with career civil servants. The feasibility of the report's recommendations can't be assessed because they haven't been costed. And there's a particularly negative spin put on the suggestion that the Higher Education Authority will take responsibility for academic and research strategies, thus eroding the academic freedom of individual colleges. All in all, not exactly the international publicity the Departments of Education and Enterprise will be seeking at this challenging time. And that's the education news, Sean.
Thanks to Barry for this week's news. Barry Hennessy will of course be back at the same time next week. You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Podcasts of previous programmes can be downloaded from iTunes or from our website www.insideed.com. You can contact the programme on 086 8962 665. In the last month or two, many of this year's Leaving Certificate graduates began new courses in colleges, universities and institutes of technology all around the country. But by this time next year, 3 in every 20 of them will not have progressed to their second year. This information was gathered and published in a report just published by the Higher Education Authority. I met up during the week with one of the authors of the report, Muirish O'Connor. As well as being a co-author of the report, Muirish is the head of policy and planning at the Higher Education Authority. I met up with Muirish to discuss the report. I began by asking him how big a problem we have of students beginning third level courses and not finishing them.
We focused in particular on the 12-month period between March 2008 and March 2009. And in that period, we found 85% of first years moved to second year. So we lose 15% of students between first year to second year. In terms of total completion rates, our estimate would be that 4 out of 5 university entrants complete their courses. In the Institutes of Technology, it would be more like 67 to 70% complete, and I think an average across all higher education institutions, we found that about 3/4 of students complete their courses.
Okay, so if we take the ones then from first year to second year, Muirish, about 15% of the students who start first year don't make it into second year. How does that compare with the position in other countries?
The Irish system, even though 15% is a very substantial amount, and we're probably losing between 8 and 10,000 students over the course of a cycle of studies, we still have 3/4 graduating, and that's considered very good by international standards.
And again, if we go back to those first years, Muirish, we've said that 15% of them drop out. Is that because they fail their exams, or is it because they choose to do something else?
The sort of personal reasons behind the what we call the non-presence or dropout is beyond the scope of the current study. What we were doing was we're using the student record system to basically identify how many of the students that were present in the higher education system in March 1st, 2008 were still present or in the places expected 1 year later. So when we quantify that 15% of first years didn't progress to second year, we didn't really get down to the exact reasons. But we know from previous study that much of it has to do with underperformance, with people struggling to engage with the academic and intellectual challenges presented in higher education. We know that students can have sort of unrealistic expectations and a lack of clarity about what's required in higher education. We find interesting differences across fields of study by gender, and the most striking differences relate to the leaving certificate points that people bring to higher education.
Okay, so if we take the different sectors then, you've said that the dropout rate or the level of continuation,
yes,
is different by sector. So what sectors did you look at?
Well, we looked at the two main sectors of the public higher education system in Ireland, of course, the universities and the Institutes of Technology. And we do notice substantial differences by sector. At the level 8 courses, the BA type courses in universities, we lose 9% of students first year to second year, whereas in level 8 courses in Institute of Technology we lose 16%. So you can see that substantial variation. I know you have an interest in education colleges yourself, and they have very high rates of completion there. We only lose 4% of students in education colleges first year to second year, and we find that actually that the variation by field of study is very substantial, ranging from only losing 2% in medicine to losing 27% of first years between first year and second year in computer science, and the sciences in general present a problem.
Okay, so that's interesting. So there's one of the things I hear you saying there is that maybe the students are more likely to complete the courses that have the higher points. Is that,
yes,
right?
Students with higher points are more likely to complete courses. And there is quite a strong relationship between the prior educational attainment, we refer to it as captured, measured by leaving certificate points, CAO points, and the likelihood of progression. So the higher one's attainment in second level, the more likely one is to engage successfully with higher education. We looked at the individual subjects in a way that was done more comprehensively than ever before, and mathematics has a sort of a particularly strong impact on the successful engagement with higher education, and it extended beyond the subjects that you might associate with mathematics. People who did well in mathematics, people particularly who attempted and did well in the higher level honours maths, show remarkably high levels of progression.
So maths is kind of one of these bellwether subjects that
it seems to have a certain X factor around it in terms of its resonance with the skills required to engage successfully with higher education.
Because you also looked at English, isn't that right?
Yeah, and English too, very strong. And in fairness, I suppose we shouldn't overplay the maths results. Maths of the individual subjects, maths was the strongest. But the most significant impact was the totality of prior attainment, and English was also very strong. We found less strong relationship between performance in Irish and progression, but maths and English were very key determinants.
And if we go then to the individual subjects, okay, the ones with the most points are more likely to progress.
Yes.
What about other student characteristics, like for example male and female? Is there a difference in their progression?
Yeah, females, as you probably know, are more likely to enter higher education now, and we found that over the course of the studies in higher education, females are more likely to progress. So while the national average, say, was 15% lost between first year and second year, 17% is the rate among males and 13% among females. Now, interestingly, the ESRI were recruited into this piece of work to look at what they call multivariate analysis, where they can disentangle the various factors, and they would maintain that the differences that we observe in gender aren't gender differences per se, but they're a reflection of male underperformance in Leaving Cert, and also the likelihood or the inclination of males to pursue science and technology subjects, which is again where we find the highest. So it's hard as a chicken and egg thing between the gender, the field of study and the prior attainment.
So it's a little bit like girls have higher points, yeah. So then they're, and people with higher points are less likely to drop out.
Exactly.
So,
and girls are in the fields of study in which we observe the highest completion rates, and it's a bit difficult to disentangle the impact of field of study or the impact of gender in those. But at aggregate level, girls enter higher education in larger numbers, and they are more successfully engaged with higher education than males.
And another student characteristic that you might have looked at, I'm not sure, is mature students versus traditional students.
Yeah, we certainly did. At aggregate level, we found no differences, both mature students and younger students, immature students, you might call them,
right.
have 15% in terms of that first year to second year transition. We found some interesting differences at the different levels, and in level 6 and 7 national framework qualifications, what you might call the sub-BA programmes.
Would these be diploma courses?
Exactly, yeah. Formerly known as higher education certificates and diplomas, and now we think ordinary degrees. So 6 and 7 on the framework, those shorter duration courses provided mostly by institutes of technology, that mature students engaged very comfortably and successfully with those and had higher completion rates and transition rates there, and lower transition rates in the Level 8 full BA programmes. Now that's interesting because it suggests that for adults, engaging with higher education is sort of done more easily in more shorter horizon programmes. And that the what they call the ladder system of progression that was pioneered by Institutes of Technology, where you do 2 years level 6, an add-on year to get a level 7, and another year to get a level 8. Our study would indicate that suits adults, that's good for adults.
What do we know about the obstacles that people encounter that stop them from progressing through through their third level course?
Yeah, there's an issue around we had an expert over from the US, the United States, Vincent Tinto, and he's an expert on student success and on the student experience. And our findings here concur very much with the experiences of students internationally. And expectations of students is a huge issue. The clarity and a sort of sense of realism about the expectations, their sense of whether they belong in college is vital, and this is at the root in many ways of some of the socioeconomic inequality.
So this would be a student should, if they go into college, they should expect that they have the right to be there, and
yes,
that they can do well there.
Exactly, and there's a sense of belonging there, and there's a sense that a sense of high expectations of themselves, and even in the culture of the schools they attend, and even in the culture of the home, expectations that higher education is a legitimate sort of and valuable route. There's a need for support, and particularly in the early weeks of first year, there's a need for academic support. We've identified some, like I was saying about the mathematical problems, there's a need for interventions that give a sense of involvement with the institution. A lot of the literature now talks about a sense of belonging. An 18-year-old, a typical student, their biggest preoccupation in the early weeks of college is who's my friend, who are my supports, what am I like? There's quite existential, social questions, and that in the sort of in the when it's been thoroughly researched, a lot of dropout goes down to quite personal issues as well as maybe academic issues. So there's a lot that institutions can do, and the first year experience is vital, and the first few weeks of first year is vital.
So the kind of things then that a third level college can do would be to have some kind of an induction for the students.
Absolutely,
and
yeah,
to help them have high expectations for themselves, and to put in place supports,
yes,
that look after their personal as well as their academic,
yes,
needs.
Yeah, exactly. So I suppose a vibrant campus, the clubs and societies have a key role. the sense of involvement, sense of academic engagement. And I think it would be useful for the Irish system to and the institutions to work collectively to identify, say, what is it about the sciences and what is it about engineering that is causing such difficulty for Irish students? Because, ironically, a lot of the areas that were where we identified some of the most serious challenges are those very areas that we, in our national enterprise and economic strategy, smart economy and all that, have identified as key growth areas, sciences, STEM, the science, technology, engineering and maths.
And Marish, do we know if there's any element of students just picking the wrong courses and that that might be why they're dropping out?
Yeah, oh yeah, very much. And it's kind of an extension of that point on expectations. The issue of guidance is really important.
This would be the career guidance that they receive at post-primary.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it we're in the HEA, we're concerned with the higher education sector primarily, but there's certainly room for improvement in that interface between higher education institutions and second level. And I think there's an issue with guidance where in Ireland the quality of guidance can tend to vary with the sort of prestige of the school. So in a way, the kids who least need good guidance, because their parents know it all and have been through it, probably have the best guidance services. And the schools which serve more disadvantaged and non-traditional households for engagement in higher education probably have the least. So I think there's an issue of guidance now. I know we've a lot of very excellent guidance counsellors in our system, but I'm not sure we've adequately resourced or linked
or targeted the guidance services to where they're needed.
Exactly.
Most,
So that's it. And even say computer science is the sort of area where we've identified very significant numbers. And I think, like it was said at our launch event, some people were saying that second level students have a very unrealistic sense of what computer science is. They might think, oh well, I like computers, I like computer games, I'm good at computer games, maybe I'll do that, without appreciating the kind of mathematical content, the scientific content, and the challenges, the academic challenges of such a course. So there's a huge amount that institutions could do in that first year, academic support and creating a sort of a good, vibrant and inclusive environment on campus.
Although you would have thought that, you know, with work experience on transition year now, that might be less of a problem than before, but obviously there still is an element of people going into courses that they don't fully know about.
Yeah, well, again, I've seen a study very recently where transition year is those who do transition year do better in their leaving cert, but those who have transition year available to them as an option are most likely to come from the privileged and upper middle income schools and backgrounds. So even transition years and intervention isn't evenly availed of.
So there really is an underlying story here about access and about
inequality.
There's a huge
issue, yeah. And there's a huge issue around. It's clear, and it was always clear, but this reinforces it now, that our sort of national objectives around participation and attainment and achievement of higher education have direct implications for the whole education system in Ireland. And and for instance, the foundational skills of maths, the ability to communicate in written communication, verbal communication, team working, all these characteristics that we consider now desirable of our higher education graduates, we have to nurture these at all levels. So there's a need to for a whole of system sort of development of the Irish education experience. So,
and Marish, we heard a lot during the week about students not being able to continue their courses if registration fees are increased. Mm. Is there any evidence from this study that students drop out for financial reasons?
Well, it's kind of beyond the scope of the study, but we did find that people in receipt of maintenance grants were more likely to successfully complete their courses than people that weren't on maintenance grants. And we found this particularly in the Institute of Technology sector. And that does correspond with our other sort of our evidence base to date, that financial constraints can represent a barrier to participation in higher education. We found I'd be particularly concerned about the groups who would be at income thresholds outside the scope of our maintenance grants. Whatever happens with charges, it's almost certain that those in receipt of maintenance grants will have those charges paid for them. It's the lower middle income families, those just above the grant thresholds, that I would have most concern for in the context of increased costs for higher education.
And finally, Mairis, you've obviously put a lot of work into preparing this report with your co-authors. What would be the single best thing in your mind that could happen as a result of this report being published?
Well, there's an awful lot of energy and enthusiasm in the Irish higher education system. I know the news in our papers and all that is very bleak. The context is bleak. The financial context is bleak, but the policy context for education has never been better. I mean, it is ironic that it isn't accompanied by a period of financial prosperity, but education remains very central to our national strategy, to our strategy for economic renewal. And I suppose, very immediately, higher education institutions will now, and there's huge demand for this report from academic councils in their institutions, and the report's been taken very seriously and will be acted upon. Like I say, the levels of progression reflect well on the Irish education system by international standards, but that sort of connection between the consistency in the skills we nurture between the different levels is probably the key, the most important message. And I think that the report has given rise to some discussion and blogs about the merits of the CAO system. I think the CAO system is actually a very good system, but we do need to reflect on what counts as points. And if we want sort of the sort of more foundational underpinning core skills of teamwork, creativity, and mathematical competences to feature, we have to value them. They have to be reflected in the point system. But I think the next 10 years will be a period of considerable reform, and there'll be serious attention paid to the student experience in Irish higher education and to the betterment of all.
That's all we have time for on this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programmes on www.insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email us on insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to my guest, Mairis O'Connor, and to Barry Hennessy for the education news. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.